This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When the Dula family gets together, it's a big deal. Dula descendants hold huge family reunions in western North Carolina that include the black and the white sides of the family. But these reunions didn't always feature both branches of the family tree. For decades, the two sides didn't communicate or acknowledge their blood ties at all. Beth Davison created a documentary about the Dula family's reconciliation. The film is called Dula Town, after an area of Caldwell County that was inherited by the family. Beth Davison is a filmmaker and faculty member at Appalachian State University, and she joins us now. Welcome, Beth.
Hi. Hi, thanks. I'm delighted to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to share the story.
Well, it's good to have you here. Tell us more about the roots of this Dula family and the family tree.
Okay, well, I'm going to start just kind of how I came into the story, because the story really isn't about me. I'm not technically a doula, just at this point kind of an honorary doula. But with me in the studio, you'll hear from others who this is their family story. But this is a story that originates out of Caldwell County, and my family moved to Lenoir when I was 10 years old, so I basically grew up in the area. And I was certainly aware of the Dula surname, and I had heard Dula Town mentioned in passing, but to be honest, it just didn't register. And growing up, I was just unaware of the fascinating history of the Dula family and the Dula Town place. So just in the last 5 or 10 years, reconnecting with people from my past, specifically high school, I kind of got wind that there was a story there, and got interested in it and learned more about it, read a book on it, and just really got hooked on the story and decided that there needed to be a documentary about it.
The documentary is about these two sides, two branches of the family, black and white. Tell us about the roots and the origins of this family and the white man and the enslaved woman by whom he had many children after having children with a white wife. And so this gives us the two branches. But tell us more. Who are these people?
Yeah, so the Dula surname is pretty extensive in the western part of North Carolina, primarily in Wilkesboro, Caldwell counties, and surrounding counties. And the Leslie and Beth, who are also with me today, can tell you more about the extended family. But my story starts with Alfred Dula, and he had farmland in Caldwell County, and he had a wife, and they had 6 kids, and his white wife died at an early age at 31. And after that, Alfred took up with one of the slaves named Harriet, and he never remarried, and he was with Harriet for 47 years, and they had 10 kids together. So he definitely had the white side of the family, and he had the black side of the family. But what's unique about this story is how Alfred treated the black side of the family. He acknowledged them in a couple of ways. He educated them, and in the end, he left them land, a significant amount of land, about 2,000 acres, which makes up Dula Town and is largely intact today.
And we'll talk about that. And, of course, then that family, that side of the family got together, had reunions. That's the story you got wind of and created the documentary. We'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk to some family members. But it's interesting because as you talk with people who had gone to these reunions early on, the white side of the family didn't really want to acknowledge that there was this kind of a tie. And here's a clip from your documentary where you talk with one of the members of the black side of the Dula family at the reunion.
The world doesn't want to show or see this because there are a lot of people that won't claim where they actually come from or what their bloodline is.
Clip from the documentary Dula Town about the Dula family. I'm talking to Beth Davison, who's the director of that film and a faculty member at Appalachian State. Dula Town is going to be screened at the Meredith College Documentary Film Festival on January 27th. So as the story evolves, both sides get together, and it's fascinating. I'd like you to paint the picture as an outsider, someone who doesn't go to these things regularly, but one who heard about the story and sees this from the outside. What do you see? What does it look like to you as you go to the actual reunion itself?
Well, I think it's a story that probably couldn't have been told the way it is told now about 50 years ago. So I do think it's a very timely story. I think it's an uplifting story. When I share it with other people, everybody's, gets excited. Where, the emphasis for these two sides of the family is reconciliation and recognition, where there wasn't any before. So I think it is definitely a story of our time. I think people are more willing to embrace their identity, and we see that with the popularity of the DNA kits now, that people are willing, I think, to receive the information that, we're not purebreds and we're a mix of a lot of things. And you can certainly see that playing out in this family and embracing it. I think there's acknowledgement of hurtful past, but I do see a lot of positive energy and moving forward, and just the constant connections that are happening all the time about people on both sides of white and black, reaching across and say, hey, how are we related, or we are related?
Well, let's talk more about that, and I can bring in two doula descendants now, Beth Hickman Haig and Leslie Doula McKesson. Leslie is also the author of a book about the doula family called Black and White, The Story of Harriet Harshaw and Squire James Alfred Doula. Welcome to both of you, Beth and to Leslie. Welcome.
Thank you.
Leslie, let me start with you. You wrote this book. When did you start your investigation into the doula family history?
Well, it actually started with my father. My father's grandfather was the son of Alfred and Harriet. And my father, as a young boy, spent a lot of time at his knees just hearing those stories. And it kind of stoked a fire in him, I think. And all during his life, he would go around and interview relatives and just jot down notes on pieces of paper. And he told me, I gave him the book Roots in 1976 when I had gone off to college at UNC, Chapel Hill. And he fell in love with the book, and he just started kind of frantically documenting everything that he could get his hands on. And he told me that he wanted me to write a book one day about the family history. And I told him, yeah, I'll do that after I retire. But in about 2012, I got this itch, I don't know where from, but I just felt that I needed to write it. The time was now. And so I finished the book in about 6 months or so, and it was published in 2013.
What kind of research did you have to do? Again, you're kind of surrounded by the history and living the history. Yes. What kind of research did you do?
Actually, it was really kind of cool because the research that my father had done had been kind of, walking to courthouses, getting hard copies of documents, getting information from people and kind of doing modified transcripts of what he'd heard from him, from those people. But by the time I started researching, a lot of things were available digitally. So I was able to pull up copies of public records from my computer. I was able to find things that we had never even seen before that had really, they really began to flesh out the story. And as I would sit on my bed at night and write it, just by putting those documents together, a more comprehensive story than we had ever had came together. And some errors that had kind of been transmitted through the oral history were made plain and made clear through the documents that popped up.
Many of the errors surrounded Harriet Harshaw and how she came to the doula household and their relationship. Tell us what you found.
That's right. One of the primary errors that we heard early on was that she had come to the household with Elizabeth Evelyn Corpening, who was the wife of James Alfred Doula, supposedly as a gift when she was married, a gift from her father. But what we learned in the research was that she actually came to the household in 1946, probably shortly before Evelyn died or perhaps even immediately after. She came there to help Alfred take care of his six children that he already had. So she was brought in as a housekeeper, and she brought with her two young children that she had already had by a previous owner.
Do we know anything about their relationship? I mean, here they had been together, openly together as a couple, as I understand it, for nearly 50 years. Do we know anything about their relationship?
Only what we can put together. I think it was as open as it could have been in those times, because there were certainly, you know, social taboos that they had to live under. But they, at one time, Harriet attempted to have a relationship with a black man. She ended up pregnant by that man, and that child unfortunately died. So that child, named Reether, was not one of the surviving children, but she did at one time try to have a relationship that was, you know, something different from what she had with Alfred. He wasn't pleased. That's the family story that we get. He ran the guy out of town, and Harriet stayed with him for the rest of his life. So they were together 40 years or more.
Social and legal taboos. I mean, certainly at that point, they would not have been legally allowed to marry.
Absolutely.
What about the transfer of wealth, the inheritance? I understand that great care had to be taken to make sure that that his will was in fact executed and remained in place, right?
That's right. That's right. His will was very, I think, carefully drafted, because he never came out and said, I'm leaving this property to my children. He said, I'm leaving this property to Harriet Harshaw and her children. Her children was specifically what he said. He had arranged on the back end, though, with the youngest two sons, one of which was my great-grandfather, that he would leave the majority of his land to them in exchange for them promising to take care of Harriet for the rest of her life. So not only was there the will, but there were also several land transfers, property transfers, that you can still pull up in the Caldwell County Register of Deeds, where he transferred property over to his sons with Harriet for the price of a mule or, you know, similar arrangements.
Beth Haig, what did you know about the Dula family and your relationship to it as you were growing up?
Okay. Well, I'm also a great-great-grandchild of Alfred by his first wife. And at some point in my early childhood, my mother was telling someone in front of me that my great-great-grandfather had indeed sired children by a black woman. However, when I repeated that story to somebody in front of her at a later time, she immediately corrected me and said, oh, no, they took his name when at emancipation. They did not, they weren't his children. So she was aware of that relationship, but kept it unpublic.
When apparently that was a big part of the story, at least on the white side of the family, not acknowledging these actual blood ties, right?
Exactly. So, growing up in a segregated South, I very quickly learned to keep my mouth shut about it, but knew that her first story was probably the accurate one. And my mother had done a previous book, if you want to call it that, about the family history, which was not nearly as extensive as Leslie's, and focused on the white side. And she mentioned the slavery, but did not really mention the relationships in that.
So when did you learn about the reunions that had been happening? And initially, it was the black side of the family. When did you hear about them, and when did you start going?
Well, I learned about them shortly after I returned to North Carolina. I had been absent from the state for many years, and I learned about them. And the first one that I learned about happened to be the same weekend that a family reunion on my other side of my family was occurring. So I didn't have an opportunity to participate at that point, even though I was interested. But it's only been the last couple of reunions, which happen every other year, that I've actually attended.
What was that like for you the first time you went?
It was an interesting experience. I'm not a big group person, so I have a sort of that reaction when I'm in a big group. But I was not the token that time because there was other white relatives with me. This most recent one, I was the token, and I began to sense some of the experience that many of my black relatives have already had as the token in a group.
Leslie Dula McKesson, talk about those years when the white side of the family simply wasn't acknowledging. What was the was that any topic of conversation at the Dula family reunions, or was that something that people just sort of ignored and moved on? How did everybody take that part of the story?
It really wasn't. It really wasn't part of the conversation. The reunion started out as the Harriet Dula reunion, and that's kind of the scope that it carried, you know, for a number of years. It didn't actually include members of our white relatives until one of our relatives named Carla Zimmerman found out about it by speaking with my father. My dad told her there was going to be a reunion, said, well, why don't you come? And she decided to come. I think this was probably in the 90s. And so Carla, I think, was the first one of the white relatives to come. And then she started talking to other of her closer-in relatives and saying, well, why don't you come with us to this reunion? And that was when we started having some of our white relatives actually show up for the reunion. So there was never really an intentional effort made, yeah, let's call our white relatives and have them come in. It just kind of happened by karma or something. I don't know what caused it to be, but it was almost an accident. But it just picked up so much momentum that it's continued in several different ways across the years.
How was it received the first time? It sounds like karma and reconciliation at this point, but I wonder how that first reunion went.
I think the first reunion was a little awkward. I remember there were some members of the planning committee that kind of looked when they saw some white people come in, and there was a, you know, a furrowed brow, what's going on here? But once they became more aware of our story and our history and our common past, then it got to a point where it was no longer a thing. You know, these are my cousins. And the one of the traditions at the reunion is that there is a table named for each of the descendants. And now, once we receive the attendees, there's a table set for Julius's descendants or Aurelius's descendants. So it has begun to expand to include the other side, the half-brothers and sisters on the other side.
One of those white descendants is George Copening Love, who's quoted in the documentary.
So we walked in, I was kind of surprised to see 150 people that are black that I'm related to. Of those people, I got to looking at them, and one lady looked just like my grandmother. And one guy from Ohio, a Dula guy from Ohio, looked just like my cousin Mike, which I had no clue how I was related. So it was an interesting moment.
That's a clip from the documentary Dula Town. My guests are filmmaker Beth Davison, Dula descendants Leslie McKesson and Beth Haig. And the documentary is going to screen at the Meredith College Documentary Film Festival in Raleigh on January 27th. Leslie, what do you, I don't have too much time left, about 30 seconds or so, but what do you make of the fact that there is a documentary now telling this story?
It amazes me. It warms my heart. I think it would have made my father so proud. He knew that it was being developed, but he didn't live to see it. And I think that would have been the capstone of his life, honestly. I love the documentary.
Well,
I'm grateful that it's done.
Talking to Leslie Dula McKesson and Beth Hickman Haig, both descendants of the Dula family. Leslie is also the author of Black and White, The Story of Harriet Harshaw and Squire James Alfred Dula. Beth Davison joined our conversation. She was director of the documentary Dula Town and also a faculty member at Appalachian State University. Dula Town is going to be screened at the Meredith College Documentary Film Festival in Raleigh, January 27th. We've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Leslie and Beth. And Beth, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up, we talk to an author who explores the idea of coming back home to Appalachia in her debut novel. Stay tuned.